Regina Carter is one of the most prolific violinists working today. She grew up in Detroit, the daughter of an auto worker and a kindergarten teacher. She started playing classical violin, but transitioned to jazz as she grew up. And while studying, she actually emulated the sounds of horns rather than violins to develop a unique playing style and inflection. She's released numerous albums covering many different genres, and again, she's changed her focus slightly here in her most recent release, Southern Comfort. She'll be in Kansas City this weekend at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. Regina Carter, can you tell us about the inspiration behind your new album, Southern Comfort?
Well, what's interesting is that this album, Southern Comfort, is about, it's my journey of trying to learn about my father's family and search my ancestors and find out from where I come and from whom I come. And so I spent a lot of summers growing up in Alabama, where my father was from, with my grandmother.
Paternal or maternal grandmother?
Paternal, mm-hmm. Yeah. And with a lot of cousins. And, you know, just an old wooden house, no bathroom inside. That you had to go to the outhouse, and we'd be bathed in the tin pan out front. So, tin tub, rather. Mm-hmm. So I spent many, many years down there. So, and I feel like this isn't something strange. Like the music that I recorded it's in me, and it's something. Yeah, it's a part of me. So, but the thing I think I really had to be aware of, and even with the last record, every record I try to be aware of, you can't approach every style of music or every culture of music the same way. You have to really respect the culture of it and understand the culture of it. So I wouldn't try and play a whole bunch of bebop licks over these tunes because it just wouldn't fit and it wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. So the thing is that the tunes I chose to record, they come from some very beautiful field recordings where most of the time it would just be a lone voice singing. And from that, try not to over-decorate, if you will, these beautiful melodies, but present them with my own spend on them, because I'm not living back then, but I didn't want to over modernize them, I wanted the raw beauty to still be able to shine through.
And you mentioned you were searching for the key to your paternity or the history of your paternity, and I'm curious, what did you find? Was there kind of a mystery you were trying to uncover, or were there bits of stories that got more shading? What did you uncover?
Well, unfortunately, I couldn't go that far back. I need a genealogist at this point. It's just really difficult for some African Americans. But mm-hmm. I had never met my grandfather. He passed away before I was born. But interestingly enough, as I was starting to record this project, as I said, I have many boxes here that haven't been unpacked. I had a box from my mother's home from when she passed in 2005, and I said, let me just finally open this box and, you know, do what I'm going to do with this stuff. And right on top, I found a picture of my grandparents with all 14 children. And so it was my first time seeing my grandfather, and I was pretty amazed. And it just, for me, everything happens when it's supposed to happen. It happens for a reason. So it was just wild that box had been in the house all the time, but I happened to open it once I started working on this project. So it was like I needed to find that then. And I knew that my grandfather was a coal miner. So as I was on Ancestry.com and trying to find some information, that's where I came up with the idea for Southern Comfort. I thought it would be great to hear what was the music that was happening during my grandfather's lifetime and to see some of the places he may have worked or lived or traveled. And some of my other relatives, and it made the history, it made the research so much more fun because I would hear the music and it helped me remember the history. It just all there was a connection there for me.
It's so interesting you mention that, because like listening to the album, you get such a sense of place. How do you kind of cultivate that sound and that sense of place? Where does that come from you? Is it more about listening again?
Yes, definitely about listening. And although these pieces, like I said, most of these pieces we recorded came from field recordings of just a lone voice. Hearing that lone voice, but also reading the history of that time and trying to internalize and trying to put myself in that time, and just some of the stories I read and some of the interviews that I gathered from the Library of Congress, from the Lomax Collection, the John Work III Collection, and also Dr. William Ferris helped. He sent me some books that he had written and some interviews he had done. So just hearing some of these people's voices or reading their stories, I think, helped put me in a mind frame and from that I try to channel that feeling or those vibes when we recorded this record.
When you look at the Midwest, are there things that are coming out musically from this part of the country that you find really exciting and you know people should be taking a note of that perhaps aren't?
Yeah, well, I just think there's so much music out here that we may not hear unless we're directed to go and listen to it for one reason or another. And there's so much music on the planet, it would be impossible for us to hear everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, and with the internet, it's just we have so much coming at us, and a lot of times we don't go beyond what's kind of just coming at us from the internet,
from our normal like sources on the internet.
Yeah, exactly, and our surroundings, and so. I find that musicians and artists, we have this gift that we're able to travel the world and experience. Anyone has, if they want. But as an artist, you're always seeking and you're going outside of your own zone to find things and to be inspired yourself. And then when I find these gems, I want to share them. So by recording this music, it's my way of saying, here, check this out. This is something you might be interested in. And although it's my modern take on these pieces, hopefully people will be interested enough to go and check out the field recordings. And actually, I take a few of the field recordings and I play them, just short snippets of them, on the gig before we play our arrangements. So people hear where the pieces started and what we've done with them, and I find that people are always intrigued by that.
Yeah, and that was something I wanted to ask. In your tour and live performances of these works from the album, how much improvisation are you typically doing to what you may hear on the recording? How much like jazz and or other improvisation are you doing?
Well, we play the. It just depends on the tune.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them we play the head, like one of the tunes, CC Rider, we play the actual melody, and then we improvise some over it. But it's not these complicated or deep changes that are going on. They're pretty simple. But sometimes the simplest things are the most difficult to play or to convey.
As we look out at music, a little bit more bigger picture here, in terms of musical literacy, are there things that, have you concerned or optimistic about the future in terms of musical literacy in the United States and in various regions?
Well, what has me concerned is the fact that we've taken music out of the schools.
Mm-hmm.
It shows our mindset here in the West that we still think it's frivolous. And it's so incredibly important. And, I mean, there's all this research now showing that how music stimulates the brain. And it's not only helpful with children, helping them to be calm or helping them to learn or remember things, but also with patients, Alzheimer's patients, people that have difficulty walking, that have an off gait. You put music, a very rhythmic music on, helps them to walk. So the fact that we have all these findings and we still don't pay any attention, we ignore all of that. And I have nothing against sports at all, but when you look at the amount of money we pour into sports and you look at the arts and how we just really kind of poo-poo it, it's really sad, and we're really doing ourselves a huge disservice. And everyone's not interested in sports. Everyone has to find their thing. And so, if it's not available to them in the schools, then how will they know? And and just because you take a music class or an art class or what have you, doesn't mean you have to be a professional musician. But it's just something that's really good for the soul, and you know, something that every family used to gather around, whatever, whether it was the piano, the guitar, auto harp, and just sing, and it was family time, and we've gotten so far away from that. And now we're unplugged from each other and plugged into these machines, and it's very dangerous. But in my travels, I try, when it's possible, I go into schools and work with students, whether they're music students or just exposing students to music. Sometimes I go to a hospital in St. Louis. I always go to Children's Hospital and play for the kids there. And I do hospice volunteer work when I'm home. So, and sometimes I play for my patients or take music in. So it's just whatever little bit that the music community can do is important, but it's not enough.
Two questions. Do you find that's hard for you to unplug at times? And related to that, I'm kind of curious about what, you know, artists that perhaps like outside of the genre that you practice that you're listening to, on either your iPad or mobile device, we might get a glimpse into what outside of your typical, performances that you listen to for inspiration or just enjoyment?
When I'm here by myself, because my husband's also a musician and he's an audiophile, so as soon as he wakes up, he puts music on, whether it might be an opera, might be string quartet, it might be some hip-hop or something, everything, or he'll have it streaming and you'll hear Bjork and then you'll hear some Coltrane and then you'll hear, you know, but some days when I'm here by myself, it's completely quiet. Like now I have a day to myself. No music, no TV, no nothing. Just absolutely, because I need that. Sometimes I just need a day where it's just total silent and I can hear silence and I can hear the birds outside. I just need that. And sometimes I'll just say, what am I in the mood for? I'll just reach my hand up on the shelf and grab something. So I love Habib Koite. I just went to hear him live the other night. I might put him on. Or when I'm really stressed, put bagpipe music on.
No way.
Yeah, I love bagpipes, and it's just, there's something about that drone that just reaches right in. It's like the ohm, but it's coming from somewhere else, and it just chills me out completely. Yeah, and I love Ella Fitzgerald. So it's all over the map. I love music. I don't care from where it comes. I love to check out everything. I'm really curious.
I can't imagine how busy you are gearing up for the performance and the tours and all these media people getting in your way as well.
That's the fun part. Mm-hmm. The other part of like trying to make sure, is the house straight? Are the taxes done? This is the part I'm like, oh God, can I go on the road just to get away from that?
It sounds like you might need some more bagpipe music.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, Regina Carter, she'll be playing at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts this Sunday. And Regina Carter, thank you so much for sharing time with me today. That was Regina Carter, who joined us from her home in New Jersey. She'll be performing this Sunday at the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. You can subscribe to our podcast, hear this conversation again, or access any of our previous shows at kcur.org/Central Standard. Central Standard returns tomorrow with a search for the greatest noodles in and around Kansas City with the Food Critics. Up to date is just 1 minute away. Central Standard is produced by Christy Garten and myself with the help of Kate Baxendale. I'm Matthew Law Middleton, and this is KCUR.